If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's Thursday, March 30th, 2017. Stephen St. John and Nate Buchiti, thank you to our guests so far today. We talked to Buster Olney from ESPN, our weekly baseball insider. Gary Lezak gave you the weather, I think. And then Mizzou head basketball coach Kanto Martin was on the show. You can listen to those interviews and others after the show on our podcast page at 810WHB.com. Coming up, we're going to talk to Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News at some point. TSN Mike is his handle.
Oh.
What's wrong?
Watching footage of a massive brawl at the McDonald's All-American game last night. On busted coverage. It's not pretty.
No. Speaking of, I'm glad you brought that up, Michael Porter Jr., the MVP of the McDonald's All-American game last night with 17 points and 8 rebounds as he continues to try to recruit some of the uncommitted prospects that were there. 6 uncommitted prospects.
They got Michael Porter Jr.
Right.
Michael Porter! Mm-hmm. I'm getting tickets.
Well, get a try. I'll get him.
Be a hot ticket.
Oh, that November 10th game against Iowa State at Mizzou Arena, that'll be fun. It'll be wonderful. So, and then the next day, Mizzou and Tennessee in football. That's quite the weekend. That'll be a birthday weekend for me. I'll treat myself to a wonderful birthday weekend a couple of weeks early. Go to both those games. Perhaps stay with the Sutton family. I've got some invites. I got connections with BMAC. BMAC's on the coaching staff for the Mizzou baseball team, and you don't want to accept that and take his invitation to come down there and watch some baseball and hang out. That's fine, BMAC, if you're listening, I got you. Jake, you've accepted, haven't you?
Accepted what? The invitation?
BMAC's invitation.
Yeah. Brian McCray extends an invitation. I'm not going to say no.
Oh!
It's BMAC.
Right!
I'll say yes. He's a friend.
Amen, brother.
He's a friend.
Lebo will go. Lebo. Todd's always ready for road trip.
Well,
this guy.
It's like his second school.
King of the road, really. Well, his wife graduated from Mizzou, so
right.
He knows how to keep mama happy.
He's a Tiger fan.
Let's go to Mr. Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News. Follow him on Twitter. TSN Mike is his handle. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Doing very well. Mike, it may not be surprising to you, but a whole bunch of Missouri fans that had no plans of watching the McDonald's All-American game last night, based on what's happened the past week or so, we all tuned in watching Michael Porter Jr., and I know it's not the best brand of basketball. It's not a very good brand of basketball, but when the number one kid in the nation is going to go to your school, you watch. And so I watched, and I would just like to get your opinion of Michael Porter Jr. as a player. He was named the MVP of the game last night.
Well, he's an excellent player. I mean, great size for his position. Almost, you know, he's, from a standpoint of size for position, he's almost Durant, and he actually comes with more strength than Durant even has now. I mean, we all remember the Durant at the combine, is the year he attended after his freshman year, struggling to get 220 pounds in the air even once. And so, you know, that's not going to be a problem for Porter. He's going to, you know, he's a sturdy guy, and he's not as incredibly skilled as Durant, but that's okay because, like, no one who ever played is at that size. But he's really is skilled. He can do a lot of things with the basketball. you know, he's very gifted. I'll be honest with you, Steve. I'm not sure what it leads to, though. I mean, I don't know whether there will be enough around him for it to make a huge difference. And then he leaves. And, you know, I know there's been some conversation this week that it's not going to be more than 1 year. But, I mean, that player has never stayed 2 years. I mean, it's never happened. The closest would have been Blake Griffin, who was kind of a, you know, who was like a top 10 pick or top 50, or not pick, but recruit, top 10, top 15, who became better maybe as a freshman than people expected, and then, but still wasn't quite there and needed another year, and then he stayed. But that person, that player, that number one player, I mean, it just doesn't happen. So I'm not sure what it, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, I just want people to be realistic. I mean, it's going to be nice to have a player like that, but what does it lead to? I mean, does it build your program? I think that's the question that I have and concern about what they're doing there.
We had Konzo Martin in studio yesterday and a nice long conversation. We've already talked to him a couple of times. And the hope is, and so then you tell me how far off this is or how realistic or unrealistic it is. The hope is that you know, getting Michael Porter Jr. jumpstarts the program, and maybe they can get one or two other high-level recruits to come along with him this year. That'll lead to his brother, who's a top 40 player in 2018, to come after him. And then along with that, and this is even more important, I think, because this means the long-term success, Konzo Martin getting into St. Louis and getting any of those players, because none of the good players from St. Louis have really ever come to Missouri. We looked at the numbers. It's staggering. It just hasn't happened. And him being from St. Louis, you feel like there's going to be at least some success there. And the way I look at it is they can hope for a jump start to the program the way Michael Beasley jump-started K-State, and then Frank Martin got things up and running. And for that you know, span of time when Frank Martin was there, they were a tournament team every year, and they were really good, and they recruited at a different level. That's the hope. How unrealistic or realistic could that be?
You know, I think it's I think that a lot of what you're describing is realistic, but none of it has anything to do with having Michael. And what I'm concerned about is Ben Simmons and Markel Fultz and Dennis Smith, and you put that guy on an island, and it doesn't go well, and then your reputation is damaged. I mean, Johnny Jones is gone. Lorenzo Romar, gone. Mark Gottfried, gone. I mean, and I don't think that's obviously not going to happen to Konzo, but that putting that player on an island without sufficient help, it damages your reputation as a program. And as I just gave you three ironclad examples, I don't think having that guy surrounded by capable players who can make him shine, and he can make the others better, and then you get to a tournament that maybe you don't think you're okay, now you've got something, but you just stick him out there and you know, and there's not enough there to support success in what's going to be a much better league than it's been over the previous 6 or 7 years. I mean, Alabama is right there on the doorstep. Kentucky is Kentucky. You obviously have South Carolina making moves forward, unless they get evacuated by this run. The league is going to be stronger, and how are you going to be sturdy enough to do that? You know, I don't know whether or not this works, and I don't want people to be disappointed if it doesn't. And going in and getting players from St. Louis, and going in and getting players from Illinois, or because of Konzo's ties, or being able to go into Indiana maybe a little bit or whatever. I mean, those are all things that you can do independent of the Porter apparatus. But my concern about that approach is that it doesn't do anything for you other than hurt your rep. Potentially. I'm not saying it. You know, look, he could come out, play great, and be so doggone good that, you know, even not having great talent around him doesn't matter. It's possible. But the Beasley comp doesn't work. I mean, Kansas State had already started to get good players in there with Bob the year before. I mean, they had something to build on, and this, you know, I mean, Kansas State wasn't ever at any point that I can recall coming off winning, you know, losing 20 games in a row, 3 years in a row. So I don't think that comp necessarily holds up. But Kansas is going to have to do the best coaching job of his career to take full advantage of Michael Porter being part of his team. And maybe he's ready for that, but he's taking a significant risk with it.
And I agree. It can't just be Michael Porter Jr., but also, I guess, from the perspective of a Missouri fan, this program over the last 3 years has been the worst power conference program in the nation. And so, I mean, why wouldn't you be excited if you're a Missouri fan, if you get the number one player in the nation? It looks like there's hope.
Oh, I understand that. I don't want them to be not excited about it. I just don't want them to be, if it doesn't go well next year, to be surprised or disappointed. And to think that, okay, this isn't going to work. We tried this and you know, look how it turned out, and he must not be a very good coach or whatever. I don't want that to be something. I don't want them to be taken by surprise. I want them to be aware of what the, you know, of what has happened in other programs that have tried to plant a, you know, a one and done talent in the midst of an insufficient supporting cast.
So I'm with you. I agree. And it has to be. I mean, St. Louis is a huge equation here, recruiting other than Michael Porter Jr. I'm absolutely with you. It can't just be him. There has to be better.
But I don't
recruiting.
Know. You know, I mean, maybe there's enough transfers out there that, you know, there's guys floating all over the place now. Maybe there's enough out there that Mizzou can get in that picture and get, you know, 4 or 5 good players, and then, you know, and then it's not a problem. But, I mean, it's not like there's a whole bunch of top 15, top 30 guys out there, you know, that are hanging loose in terms of the high school guys. I mean, that's not reality. They're not there. There's a couple. I don't know whether Mizzou can be competitive for any of them. I mean, I don't think they can get in on Bamba or whatever. There's a couple out there. I think there was at least two uncommitted players in the McDonald's game, maybe one or two more.
I think six last night.
So there's a few.
Yeah, there were six last night uncommitted.
Six, okay.
All right, Mike, let's transition over to the Kansas Jayhawks. We haven't had a chance to talk with you since they lost at home at Sprint Center to the Oregon Ducks. What was your major takeaway from that game?
If you read me on the day of the game, I mean, I still picked Kansas because I'd had them in my bracket and I thought they would find a way. But I, on the day of the game, I said, folks, there's a warning in the sky here. You guys got to watch out, because the way Oregon is set up right now, your lineup doesn't work against it. And you're probably going to have to change. And you know, Landon Lucas, you guys know I like Landon a lot. And I've been a fan of his since I saw him as a high school player. And I just knew right away that he was going to have a terrible time in that game. Unless they could find a way to isolate him on the block and he could be patient in the post, and he could give you 14 points or something, and then the fact that he was going to get blown off the floor on the defensive end maybe wouldn't matter as much. But he had no chance defensively in that game. He had zero chance. He could not impact that game unless KU went zone. And you know that's not happening on a regular basis. There was nothing for him to do. He can't move with Jordan Bell. Can't. That's not who he is. I mean, he needs a Kennedy Meeks on the floor in order to be relevant. And that player wasn't there because Boucher was hurt, and so he couldn't guard anybody. So you're struggling right away. And, okay, so what's plan B? If that doesn't work the way you hope it will when you're game planning, what's plan B? Plan B is you bring in Vic, you put Jackson on Bell. You know you're giving up some strength, but you're actually superseding his athleticism. And you think, okay, this could work maybe because we've got so much dynamism on our own. And how are they going to guard us? We got Josh Jackson, who's staying with him. We got Frank Mason, the National Player of the Year. And then what happens? 2.5 minutes into the game, Josh Jackson has 2 fouls. Plan B is down the tubes. You're down 14 at half. I mean, that's what happened. And people don't pay any attention to any of this stuff. It's infuriating, guys. You know what happened? You know, this is the summum total of you know, national basketball analysis, and I'm not talking about my peers. I'm talking about the people who drop in every March and think they know and want to tell you. I'm not talking about my peers who are fabulous. But the people who drop in and think they know, they see one seed loses to three seed, you know, Bill Self loses, you know, in the Elite Eight, and they think they know what that means. And they don't know because they don't look at the basketball game and understand the basketball game. They haven't taken any time to learn the teams. They don't know who Jordan Bell is. They don't know who Dylan Brooks is. They don't know who Chris Boucher is. They maybe heard Oregon lost a guy. They don't know. And so you get this nonsense. I mean, I was thinking back, you know, in sort of pondering our conversation today, I was thinking back, you know, people look, you know, start recounting all the Elite Eight losses and all that. Go back to 2011. Look at who Kansas's starting backcourt in that game was. And then you tell me that what Bill Self did during the regular season wasn't miraculous, as opposed to what happened at the very end of the season was a disaster.
That was the was that the backcourt of Sharon Collins and Brady Morningstar?
Was Sharon still around that year? I don't think he was. He might have been.
Okay, his last year was 2010, so it would have been like Tyshawn Taylor.
I believe it was Tyshawn Taylor, Brady Morningstar, Tyrell Reed.
Tyrell Reed,
I think
yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, guys. When do people start to actually know what they're talking about? Look, if I tell you why the Cleveland Indians blew the World Series last year, you can tell me I'm a complete freaking fraud. You know why I don't know? Because I don't know who plays for the Cleveland Indians. I can't name five guys. I didn't watch 14 innings of the World Series. I don't know. Don't listen to me if I try to tell you why the Cleveland Indians didn't win the World Series. Because I don't know.
So let me add, because there is no shortage of hot takes about Bill Self's record in the Elite Eight, and even from some of your peers. I mean, some people that cover national, you know, cover college basketball on a consistent basis, and no shortage of theories as to why. What does it mean in your mind, if anything, that he has had a poor record in the Elite Eight?
It means he's been in the Elite Eight a lot. That's what it means. At the end of the day, that's what it means. It's really hard to get there. No matter who you are, it's really hard to get there. Ask Mike Krzyzewski. Mike Krzyzewski's lost prior to, in this decade, think about it. Mike Krzyzewski won two titles, and he's lost in the Elite Eight at least once, but he's also lost at least three times this decade before the Sweet 16. It's hard to get to the Elite Eight as many times as Sean Miller has, or Mike Krzyzewski has, or Roy Williams has, or Bill Self has. It's not easy. You know, people look at Tom Izzo's March record, and I think he's like 7-2 in the Elite Eight or something. And so people think that's great, and it is great. But, you know, there's been twice in the last 15 years when Tom Izzo coached the Sporting News preseason number one team and lost in the first round. Now, it was preseason, and okay, maybe we guessed wrong. They had some guys, and it didn't happen. I mean, the breadth of a college basketball season is the most underrated athletic enterprise in all of sports because of March. And look, I love March, and I think it's wonderful, and I think everybody should love March. But the problem is these people who helicopter in, who don't pay attention to the sport, and think that that bracket can tell you everything that there is to know. It doesn't. I mean, it just doesn't. There, you know, there's so much that went into KU when 13 consecutive conference championships. You cannot fake that. You know why you can't fake it? Because if you could fake it, they wouldn't be the only ones to ever do it. It's just it just frosts me when I see all this hot take garbage. And, you know, I don't use that term much. It gets thrown at me sometimes if I write a good column about, you know, that has a strong opinion about this issue or that. I get that nonsense, hot take crap. Look, I don't write hot takes because everything, again, if I wrote about the Cleveland Indians and why they lost in the World Series, that would be a hot take because I don't know anything about it. I freely admit I don't like baseball that much. I don't know any. There was a time about 10 years ago when a guy named Justin Morneau won the American League MVP.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally had never heard of him. It was like a defining moment in my life as a sports fan. I'd gotten so far away from what I grew up with that I didn't even know who the American League MVP was. That's who I am as a sports follower now. I'm not interested. You know, I'm happy for you guys. A couple years ago, you won the World Series. That was great. But I didn't watch any of it. I'm not interested. And so if I tell you who, you know, why KC won a World Series a couple years ago, I am full of garbage. I don't know it. And I just, you know, and honestly, even if I did watch it during the World Series, I, you know, my opinion wouldn't have any validity. But that's what you get so pervasively. You know, I turned on one of the ESPN shows the other day, and they're giving me, you know, the Sean Miller riot act, and I'm like, I've never seen any of you people in a gym, ever. Not one time. Not one of the people that was on that show had I ever seen in a gym. And I'm sorry, if you don't ever go, ever, I mean, how can you have a valid opinion?
Mike, before I ask you about the Final Four, do you think the Royals have what it takes to overcome the Indians this year in the Central?
It's the pitching, man. That's what it is.
Pitching
in the war. You know,
and
let me tell you, the reason I'm not interested in baseball anymore is that stuff. You know, I mean, that's a big part of it. Like, people telling me that, you know, war is the answer. I mean, if that's the case, I'm like, okay, I too much math, not interested anymore.
Mike DeCourcy is our guest. All right, we'll stay in your wheelhouse. We'll go to the Final Four now. And I know that there's new faces and some people want to see the Blue Bloods. I'm excited about these matchups. I'm especially excited to see Frank Martin and South Carolina take on Gonzaga. I pick Gonzaga to win in my bracket. The rest of my bracket is absolute garbage. But I enjoy, you know, I'm a fan of Jonathan Williams III. He's a great kid, and I'm glad he landed in a terrific spot. I'd like to see Gonzaga win a championship after having so many good teams over the years. What do you think of this matchup? I'm really excited to watch South Carolina and Gonzaga.
Well, you know, a lot of it comes down to, you know, Gonzaga's defense, which is probably the most underrated unit here in Phoenix. I mean, it's gotten very, very good. You saw what they did to West Virginia on Thursday night. They did a really nice job against Xavier on Saturday. So they have to be good again against a team that what's interesting about this South Carolina team and their offense, and I looked at this last night. They've been over, I think in this tournament, they've been between 1.02, I think, and 1.26 points per possession in the four games. I think it's gone like one, I think it was 1.12, 1.19, and then 1.02 in the Baylor game because they kind of late were just sort of going through the motions, and they won by 20 anyway, and then they went 1.26 or something like that. I don't have the sequence right, but they have four games of over one point per possession in the tournament. There were no four consecutive games during the regular season where they did that. Not one time. Not again. Not even in the pre-conference. Then they had a couple of consecutive bye games. No, they never did that. They never really even came close. They had a couple of twos. They might have gotten a three once. I don't think they did. I mean, that's incredible to all of a sudden start to score at that level. I mean, it's not like that level's so unreachable, but for them it had been like going to the moon. I mean, they just couldn't get there. So, you know, I don't really know exactly what to evaluate. I mean, I'm not 100% sure. You know, do they revert to their mean when they face a defense as good as Gonzaga, or have they suddenly reinvented themselves? But guys, if they win this thing, it's entirely unprecedented. No one has ever done what South Carolina is trying to do over the next two games, because they have never been this team the entire season, is what I'm telling you, that you can go put four to five to six games of, you know, of just good offense. Remember, a point per possession is pretty much, if you get that, you're pretty much middle of the pack. I mean, you're like maybe 150th, 180th in offense. You know, the great teams are up around 1.18 or so on average. And so know, it's just amazing to me to see that all of a sudden they're this team that can really score when they've been so far from that during the course of the year. And maybe some of that's that, like I said, you know, some people tried to put it off to Duke's bad defense, and it's not very good, and Marquette's worse defense, and it's worse. But they've done it four games in a row now, and Florida's defense is good. And they did a good number against that, too.
Mike, before we let you go, since you're talking about Frank Martin, this is obviously salt in the wounds of K-State fans who wish he was still their coach. And then we get these quotes from former K-State president John Wiefald, who said, quote, Frank should still be at K-State. John Curry wanted to hire his own coach, and they didn't get along. It's too bad. Frank told me many times that he wanted to coach here until he retired. Indeed, he told me that for a year or two after he left here. Now, of course, Frank is a Gamecock, and he loves his job completely. But if someone like Tim Weiser, for example, had been the athletic director at K-State, or someone like him in 2012, and in the years to come, Frank Martin would still be K-State's head basketball coach. How should K-State fans feel about that from their former president?
Well, first thing I would ask, I don't know the history of this. Is he the president who hired Curry?
I don't believe so, no.
Okay, well, you know, I mean, because then at least part of that would splash onto his shoes.
No, I think it was Schultz was the president.
But, you know, I mean, you see this sometimes. I mean, look, I've said often, and I've met a lot of people that are, you know, I mean, Jim Phillips at Purdue and, excuse me, at Northwestern and Tom Jurich at Louisville. And, you know, there's some really good athletic directors out there. But it's a pretty I've said it on occasion, and maybe I'm being a little bit too facetious, but, you know, the smallest club in the world is the club of smart athletic directors. I mean, you see this kind of nonsense all the time. They, you know, they get involved in these petty things. There was no reason to remove Frank, or not to remove. There was no reason to make Frank Martin feel anything other than really comfortable at Kansas State. There was no reason, no good reason to not do that. Frank Martin came into a program that had 1 year under an elite Hall of Fame level coach that started it back to, you know, there's a story I like that I tell from time to time about all this. When Frank was hired after, you know, a year of Hugs, the reaction to him among some in the KC media was not good. And there was some people that wrote that, you know, that it was a disgrace to K-State's tradition, or you know, affront to K-State's tradition to hire this guy who had only been an assistant coach and all that sort of stuff. And so I went back. I think it was a 20-year period. Might have been 25, but I think it was 20 years prior to Hugs. And I said, okay, what is their tradition? And I went back over the course of those 20 years, and I worked out their records in those 20 years. And their average record for that 20-year period was legitimately 500. It was like 15-15. I mean, that was the average. That was who they were for two decades. And so I wrote, yes, Frank Martin is a disgrace to that tradition because he's going to win. That's your tradition. Your tradition is, okay, yeah, I know you had Jack Evans and you had the, you know, Tex and you had the, you know, but your tradition, your recent tradition is 500, and he's blowing that away guaranteed. And what did he do? Michael Beasley, make the tournament, Elite Eight, this close to the Final Four. He blew away that tradition, and there should have been an appreciation for that. And, you know, and so you get, you know, you lose Frank Martin, and you get a very good basketball coach. You know, as you saw, they hustled their way into the tournament. I will say, I believe that Bruce Weber is a very good basketball coach, but I'm not going to try to snow anybody and tell anybody that the program is on as solid a footing in these last couple of years as it was when Frank was there. I'm not going to try and tell anybody that. I mean, because then people wouldn't have any reason to believe me.
Mike DeCourcy has been our guest. Excellent segment, Mike. As always, we appreciate your time, and we look forward to all of your coverage of what should be a very exciting Final Four. Thank you very much, Mike.
All right, thanks, guys.
It's Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News. Good stuff as always. Let's take a break. Jake Pounders, you know what you're doing right now?
Working.
You're working hard for your money. Mm-hmm. So hard for it, honey, on Sports Radio 810 WHB.